This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Goodis. Right now, 44 degrees with drizzle. We're expecting to head up to a cloudy high of 54 this afternoon. We've got a jam-packed noon business hour as usual. We will be checking in with the author of the book, Calculated Risk, taking a look at Wall Street today, which at least in the current situation is in positive territory. We'll also take a look at travel. Is air travel safe with COVID? Some studies suggest it might be safer than you think. And we'll also be checking on Google and the Department of Justice. It is a time of reckoning, perhaps, for Google, as both the Department of Justice and antitrust lawyers from several states taking on that giant. That's all ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And let's start right off with that section about Google and the Justice Department pursuing legal action. And right now, that antitrust suit against Google accuses it of operating an illegal monopoly. And let's get the latest from Alistair Barr, who is the editor of Bloomberg out of San Francisco. So let's start first with what the accusations are against Google from the Department of Justice and several attorneys general.
The main thrust of their case is about paid distribution deals that Google does. And listeners will probably have experienced this mostly if you have an iPhone. So if you go onto the web and you start to type something into your browser on your phone and you want to search for something, Google is the one that provides the answers. And the company pays Apple about $8 or $9 billion a year for that. And Google does this across with a bunch of phone makers, carriers, other device makers too. And the DOJ suit is basically saying that those deals exclude other rivals, other search engines that might want to reach users on phones and other devices. And really, that's something that is very, very, very new. And Google might have a pretty good argument against that, but it's certainly a very new argument.
Now, how likely is it that is this going to be something that we expect to take years, maybe a decade, or is this something that might get resolved quickly? What are the tea leaves saying about how long we could be seeing this antitrust action against Microsoft? Or I'm sorry, against Google.
So Google put out, yeah, of course. Well, Microsoft is the best comparison to this as far as how important this is, which was, 20 years ago. Google put out a statement today, which was pretty strongly against the suit. So that implies that at least for now, the company is going to fight it. So if that's the case, then this in the US, antitrust suits have to go to a court and they have to be argued in front of at least a judge. So that could be many years in the making. Now, of course, if the DOJ comes up with some remedies and Google thinks that it might be able to do those things, then maybe they could settle. But at the moment, it looks like they're going into battle.
All right. That's Alistair Barr, the editor out of Bloomberg in San Francisco. Thank you so much, as always, for your perspective on this particular case, which could have a big influence on the tech sector. Coming up, General Motors makes its move on Tesla.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
General Motors officially begins its battle against Tesla this evening with the unveiling of its electric Hummer. And let's get a preview from Jeff Gilbert, the CBS auto reporter out of Detroit. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, the Hummer had a bad reputation because of its fuel economy, and perhaps it was a bit more of a polluter than other vehicles. But now it's GM's perhaps secret weapon in the battle against Tesla.
Yeah, that bad reputation is so 2009, isn't it? I mean, back then, GM couldn't even give the Hummer brand away, so they just pretty much shut it down. But they've retained rights to the name, and the name is coming back on a 1,000-horsepower electric pickup truck, which will be a GMC product, and they're going to show it tonight at the start of the World Series. Kind of an interesting way to unveil a product during the pandemic, but it's kind of appropriate they did that because they told us about it during an ad in the Super Bowl.
What's the thought in the industry on this challenge to Tesla and other electric truck makers? You know, for example, Ford, that is really moving into that segment as well. How likely do they think that the Hummer brand will give GM any kind of advantage in this growing competition?
It's really what they call a halo vehicle. Think about it. How many people really need a 1,000-horsepower pickup to begin with, let alone one that's an electric vehicle? What this does is shows that GM can do something really unique, and it gets people talking about electric vehicles, and some people are going to want the extreme vehicle, and the Hummer name still resonates. I talked to somebody, an analyst who did some research, and if you take a look at the old Hummers, they still have twice the resale value of current vehicles from that era, which kind of blew me away when I found out about that.
Now, does Hummer come with any built-in advantages other than name recognition that gives it any kind of a leg up in this growing competition?
No, that's about it. It is a name recognition. It's a name that GM had. It's a name that I'm sure they researched and still has a cachet. And again, they're not going to bring back the Hummer brand per se. What they're doing is putting this name on a pickup truck from GMC, and this is not going to be, obviously, your typical work pickup truck. It's going to be something that has more power, more speed, and is going to be something that is really cool. They're not going to sell a lot, but it's going to get a lot of attention.
Now, GM was an early player in electric vehicles. Is this kind of a second act or a third act for them in terms of getting into this market, as we've seen other players making moves in this market for a while?
I would say it's a total reset. That's probably a better way to put it, because GM had the EV1 back in the 1990s. They had the Chevy Volt, which was an extended range of vehicle. It had an electric drive, but also had a gasoline engine. And now they are all in on EVs. There are two brands who are really all in on EVs, General Motors and Volkswagen. Volkswagen, of course, is coming off of the diesel scandal, and GM is really convinced that EVs are the wave of the future. So they're not investing in hybrids, plug-in hybrids. They're pure into electric vehicles, and they're now in the process of converting three plants to make electric vehicles.
That's Jeff Gilbert, the CBS auto reporter out of Detroit. Thanks, Jeff, as always. Up next, World Series tickets hotter than usual thanks to limited seating.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The World Series begins tonight at a neutral site in Texas, and let's talk tickets during this strange COVID season with Brad Griffith, the founder and CEO of the Game Time app in Seattle, Washington. So you've got an unusual World Series. You've got a neutral site. You've only got about 11,000 tickets, I guess, available. So what does that all mean for the supply and demand and market costs and all of that as we head into the World Series?
Yeah, hey, Jim, it's Brad. So prices currently $412 to get in. You got to buy four tickets, though, so you got to bring the whole family or your friends down to Dallas. So fluctuating just below what we saw in 2019 and in 2018 for this, as you're saying, quite unique experience on the maybe first ever neutral field for the World Series and some of the first games at the new stadium in Dallas.
So what are we talking about? Do we have any numbers yet in terms of what tickets are going for or what they could potentially go for?
Yeah, so to get in tonight for the first game is $412. Quite a drive to get there by first pitch. They tend to go up in price as the games get closer to the deciding games, 4, 5, 6, and 7. But you can get in the early games for about $400, but you got to buy four tickets together to comply with the pod structure.
Now, does that make it harder or easier, the fact that you have to buy that many tickets with such a limited supply? Does that actually make it these a little more for those who are in the area, would have be able to go to the game? Does that make them a little more valuable, a little higher price?
I think it actually makes them a little bit lower price, right? You have to get a group big enough to go. You can't just go with a friend. You got to get four together. So I think that decreases demand a little bit. And then, you know, if you're in the Dallas metro area, you're not necessarily as excited about the Dodgers or the Rays as you would be about the Rangers. So a little bit softer demand, I think, for that reason as well.
Does this give us anything to learn from this as we move forward? You know, no end in sight necessarily to this. Other sports, you know, moving ahead would say, for instance, the Super Bowl. Is there anything that maybe the Super Bowl ticket buyers might want to take if there are fans at the Super Bowl, you know, from what we're seeing here at the World Series?
Yeah, as you're saying there, we're all really learning as we go. Yeah, this is a neutral location for the first time in the World Series, as is the Super Bowl. So I think we'll learn a lot about, you know, how many people are willing to travel for a big event that has their team in it. I think we'll learn about really just is 25% of the stadium, does that work? I think there was 25,000 actually on hand for the Cowboys loss last night. So we are seeing increases in percent capacity. Whether or not we can get a high attendance percentage for the Super Bowl in February remains to be seen. But we are seeing slow increases in percent of venue able to attend. So that's been exciting for the industry.
Brad, thanks a lot for joining us. Brad Griffith, the founder and CEO of the Game Time app out of Seattle. Still ahead on Travel Tuesday, studies track the health safety of flying as the holiday season approaches.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Jim Goodis, and welcome back to the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. These are the top stories on WBBM. The federal government sets its sights on big tech, starting with a lawsuit against Google.
This is Bernie Tafoya. More teachers than usual are retiring in Illinois, and the thinking is it's because of the pandemic.
In Travel Tuesday, as studies examine the health risks of flying, airports are becoming busier places. A UK study on a COVID-19 vaccine involves people volunteering to be exposed to the virus. Right now on Wall Street, the Dow's up 360 points, the S&P 500 up 46, and the NASDAQ's ahead by 134 points. Again, AccuWeather says the drizzle that we're seeing now should head out at least for a few hours as we head up to a high of 54, and then we'll have some rain early on tonight. Under mainly cloudy skies, it'll be breezy with a low of 46. Right now, with drizzle reported, it's 44 at O'Hare. WBBM News Time at 12:31. The federal government is taking legal action against an American technology giant.
The Justice Department's lawsuit against Google says the company has been breaking the law and using its market power to fend off rivals when it comes to online search engines. That's long been alleged by lawmakers and consumer advocates. Google controls about 90% of global web searches. 11 states have joined the federal lawsuit. Google is expected to fiercely oppose any attempt to break up the company. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
The pandemic may be a factor in the decision to retire by a growing number of teachers across Illinois.
The teacher retirement system says that between June and September, 566 teachers retired. That's 45% more than Call It a Career during the same time frame last year. TRS tells WBBM that it doesn't keep track of why teachers decide to retire, but that retirement counselors tell of hearing teachers say that the pandemic has played a role in their decisions. The teacher retirement system says there's been no let-up either. The teachers are continuing to decide to retire weeks into the new academic year. TRS spokesman Dave Urbanek says the timing of the increase in retirements coincided with school districts across the state announcing their back-to-school plans. Bernie Tafoya, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. It's 12:32.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Stocks are trading higher today, and we're joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. So, well, right now, the market's up a bit. Your thoughts on how we're doing so far on Wall Street?
Well, good afternoon, Jim, and thanks again for having me on. You know, S&P is basically at the high on the day right now, up 1.3%. It's a rally on expectation of a fiscal stimulus deal in Congress, and there's a lot of rumors out there, but nothing has actually been has been agreed upon. So I'm not so sure this is going to hold. But, you know, I do believe fiscal stimulus is coming, and it just is rough to watch our Congress be so dysfunctional with the election 2 weeks away. I think they're more worried about, you know, the optics of which party looks better than actually getting something done for the American people, and that's too bad. But I do think something is going to get done soon here.
Now, what if it isn't soon? We had somebody talking about it could be January, it could be later, who knows? What if it isn't soon? What is that going to mean?
Well, what it means is that money is not going to get in the hands of consumers who have lost their jobs and have lower income than they normally would. And that would cause major problems over the Christmas season if it doesn't get done before then. That's why I do think that it will get done if it does have to wait till after the election, which it's a shame if it does, let me tell you right now, because that just shows dysfunction in the government. But if that happens, I still think it gets done before the holidays start up because they have to have consumer spending for the holidays. So I do expect it to happen. It's just, like I said, it's a shame to watch the dysfunction with Pelosi, with Trump, with everybody, McConnell, just continuing to, you know, bluster, but nobody gets anything done. But I do think that once the election's over, it's done for sure. Hopefully it will happen before then because we need it soon. There's a lot of unemployment. Unemployment is still 8%. So and now you're talking about Illinois and other states, especially Democrat-run states, are actually talking about going backwards as far as adding to restrictions, which will cause more unemployment and more businesses going down. So we need this stimulus package passed now, and I hope that they can put their differences aside and get it done.
There's a stimulus package, and then there's a stimulus package. What needs to be in this stimulus package in order for it to be the most effective? Because, I mean, I imagine it's not just simply a matter of throwing a bunch of money at the problem.
That's a great question. So here, let's start with what it doesn't need to be in it. All the pork projects that the Democrats and Republicans want for their specific constituents. What needs to be in there, and that's what's holding this up. That's why there's a disagreement. What needs to be in there is something simple. Money to the American people. And that can be done in direct payments, or it can be done just as it was the last time, where you pay, you just get money to taxpayers based on, you know, each adult and each child. And the last one that was done was a huge success. And quite honestly, it saved us from a very major collapse in the stock market. That's why the stock market rallied back. But we need another one, and it can be simple. That's the thing. What really needs to get done is a simple thing that goes right to consumers. All these other projects and things that they're arguing over, that can wait till after the election, you know. But let's get money in the hands of the American people right now, and that could be simple. And members of Congress know this. They just have to get together and get it done, and they keep pushing their individual projects on this thing instead of just worrying about the American people. It can be a simple, simple bill.
Michael Palumbo, the president and founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Michael, as always, great to get your perspective on what's going on. Up next in Travel Tuesday, the latest numbers show passengers are returning to the skies.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Studies are tracking the relative safety of flying during the global pandemic, and let's discuss a return to the skies with Joe Schwederman, professor of public sciences and director of the Chaddock Institute back to Paul here in Chicago. So how safe is flying with COVID and the precautions that the airlines are taking and the way that the air is circulating and all of that? Let's rate the safety of flying in the pandemic.
You know, the public is feeling more secure flying. I think a couple things have become clear. Airlines first have the distancing and the empty seats on a couple airlines like Southwest, those empty middle seats, giving people confidence. Some of the newest things we're hearing is just about how good the air circulation is. And, you know, air is pumped from the outside of airplanes continually flowing. It tends to be low humidity, which isn't always comfortable, but it's from a COVID standpoint, that airflow is a good thing.
Now, that kind of flies in the face, no pun intended, of what we've always thought in the past is that, you know, you get on an airplane, if somebody's sick, they're just going to spread it around the cabin. Was that necessarily not true, or have things just changed or improved so that air quality is safer now?
Yeah, I think the the mask mandate by airlines is being strictly enforced. The airports are less crowded now. You don't see TSA lines being quite the cattle car situations they were a while back. The risk is, of course, as travel grows, we could start to see, you know, packed airports again, and then people spending time at restaurants where the distancing is often hard to enforce. So there's definitely some tricky, fancy footwork that has to be done to sustain this growth. But overall, it's been a fairly good news story from airlines. So we haven't seen any stories of sort of mass contagion on airplanes themselves. And that's why this latest news is really pretty cheerful.
I would imagine, Joe, that part of this is just following basic protocols that we've all become very familiar with in the last few months. But is there anything in particular about air travel that people can do to, if they do choose to fly, to do so and make their risk of contracting COVID as low as possible?
I think everybody sees the airports as maybe one of the worst places where people get there an hour ahead. They're sitting on seats, you know, with their seat back abutting somebody else. They tend to be let their guard down a little bit in that setting. And so that's a problem. Of course, we also know that just all the things that go with taking a flight, you know, whether you're getting on people movers, you're taking the train to the airport, there's just a lot of potential exposure risk there. So we're seeing people, I think, make smart decisions, you know, often being driven to the airport and avoiding the crowds and everything else. And, you know, at the end of this month or so, soon, Southwest and other airlines may stop, zeroing out those middle seats. So we could see more crowding on airplanes. And that's where these the holidays are really going to be tricky to watch from a public health standpoint. Demand, we think, is going to be strong, and some of that distancing may be harder to enforce.
Joe, do you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
I think right now the public has a lot of pent-up demand for travel. I think international travel should still be everybody should avoid that now. There's just a lot of issues internationally. There's quarantine requirements, so forth. I think, though, if you look at the states, particularly here in Illinois, in which you can travel to without quarantine when you get back, and there's a lot of them now. I mean, New York and some East Coast states and often I've seen a big drop in COVID. So when you get there, the risk isn't any particularly greater than at home. And that bodes well for air travel. But boy, this second surge this week we're seeing in other states, that does that could throw a real wrench in any kind of recovery.
Well, I guess like everything else in COVID, stay tuned because things could change very quickly. So, but Joe, it sounds like at least if you're thinking about air travel, there's some reason for optimism. So that's always a good sign. Joe Schwederman, the professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul here in Chicago. Thank you for joining us. And join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, volunteers will put their health on the line to speed up research on a coronavirus vaccine.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The UK will ask healthy young volunteers to get deliberately exposed to COVID-19 as part of the search for a COVID-19 vaccine. And we're joined by Dr. Chris Colbert, who is an ER doctor and assistant program director of the Emergency Medicine Residency Program at the University of Illinois, Chicago. So, doctor, let's first talk about this, the whole ethics involved with this, taking healthy people and essentially infecting them with COVID, and then I guess seeing then how the effectiveness of the vaccine works. I mean, how well does that kind of trial work, as we've seen from past viri and whatever viruses that we've seen? Or is this just uncharted territory at this point?
So believe it or not, this is, in fact, one of the first of its kind. In fact, it's called the human challenge trial. And ideally, what is the thought behind this is that by providing or intentionally exposing healthy young individuals with COVID-19 or viruses such as that, you can identify a suitable dose that can be used to influence vaccine trials. It is pushing the envelope on the topic of identifying vaccines, and we are yet to find the results of this. Again, there's tons of ethical issues, as you can imagine, in the use and the practice of this. Again, cautious optimism with this. Again, it's the first of its kind. There's not a lot of research or evidence at this point that there's a lot of great studies to even compare, and I just wish these individuals the best of success, because ideally we're all looking for some means of vaccination for this virus.
It's, in a sense, it's an artificial infection of these patients. Does that at all make this less than what sounds ideal, the way in which they're being infected? Does that not necessarily reflect real-world conditions?
And Well, again, it is. That's a very good way and a very honest question in reference to this topic. Specifically, what they're doing, again, they're intentionally exposing this virus to healthy individuals. And they're looking for the outcome, again, from the outcome, identifying a suitable dose that can be used for future vaccine trials. And that's a huge, huge thought, that the positive effects versus the negative, the positive effects will outweigh the negative effects. And that's the biggest thing, is you don't know what the true negative effects will be to those individuals. And that's why there's a lot of conversation and ethical issues with this topic as well.
Yeah, the fact that these are generally healthy, generally younger people, does that at least reduce the risk of something going horribly wrong in any of these cases if they are exposed, considering even though these people tend to be the least likely to develop serious symptoms, they can develop serious symptoms?
Yeah, and here's the thing. In theory, yes. In theory, yes. No matter what capacity of pathology you're speaking, healthy people, healthy individuals, by definition, usually have better results. But again, we're talking about human beings and not poker chips at a table. You're not just throwing poker chips on the table and saying, well, hey, well, if I lose this money, I lose this money. It's totally different when you're dealing with specific lives and individuals, and you can look someone in the face and say, I don't know how this goes, but hopefully this works out. I'm sure there's a lot of conversation, a lot of documentation. Coupled with that, these individuals are signing up for something they know that they're signing up for. However, it's a huge risk. And it's my hope that the outcome is something that the community and our society can have benefit from without and as very little negative effect as possible.
Dr. Chris Colbert, the ER doctor and assistant program director of emergency medicine at the UIC Hospital, thank you so much for joining us. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.